watch cartoons. We'll take a look back at where we've been. So let's hop into our time machine.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Live Action Time Machine. I'm Scarlett.
I'm Katie.
We're your live action mates. And today we're talking about a new series on Netflix that has been taking the interwebs by storm. I think just a really promising concept, Avatar the Last Airbender. You don't see that many just really, you know, unique ideas out there. I know it already had its chance as the Shyamalan movie that came out. Oh God, was that 14 years ago? That's been a while.
I think it was 2010 or 11.
2010.
Yeah. You know, no, I remember there was promise, but you know, CGI wasn't great quite yet. You know, now we've really gotten it with these Godzilla movies. We can really showcase how good CGI has gotten in live action.
Exactly. And, you know, obviously, like, the best use for CG is always going to be in live action. I mean, it's definitely the best place to showcase that particular
it looks
animation.
Quite realistic.
It looks fantastic. I think we've perfected it, I think is fair to say, right? For sure. I remember when the first Last Airbender movie came out. I noticed they added the word Avatar to the title for the Netflix series. I think the original movie was just Last Airbender, probably because it was coming out around the same time as the James Cameron Avatar movies, and they probably wanted to avoid conflating the two of them.
A lot of overlapping details.
Yeah, pretty much. But the new one is adds the word Avatar to it, which makes sense. That's what the main character is called in this. But yeah, I feel like there was a lot of promise in that Shyamalan movie. You know, I think it was a little rough for its time. Think an amazing cast, really. I think that you know, those young actors were just really perfectly cast for those roles. And I think they really shone in that performance. Sorry, go on.
It's like the first go at the stone with Michelangelo's first go at making David. You know, the rough edges, now we're refining it.
Exactly. I think there were definitely some elements that could have been fleshed out more. I think sort of a reaction I remember a lot of people having when The Last Airbender came out is, you know, wow, like this is really, really great stuff, you know, from a director who has, you know, never steered us wrong before. But if only there could be more to it, if only they could stretch it out from just a movie into a full-on series. And, you know, I think that it's just kind of a shame that it's taken so long for that goal to be realized now that Netflix took over the property. But
you know,
I think
I always say
this is a good use of it.
That everything's better as 8 1-hour episodes.
Oh, for sure. No, this was for sure the best way to do it. You know, I think a feature length movie is great, especially, you know, one of this quality that the Shyamalan film was. But really, the best form of art is the 8-episode hour long miniseries. I think it's the only way to tell a cohesive story without getting
it's really easy to nail the pacing.
Episodes. Exactly. The pacing is so good when you only have 8 episodes and they're all an hour long. It's perfect. I mean, I don't know why we weren't doing it like this for forever. Because, you know, when you have, like, you know, in the old days, you had these, like, 22 episodes, and you had whole episodes where I didn't learn anything more about the world, or the plot didn't move forward at all. I just had to watch these characters overcome, like, I don't know, internal problems or, like, relationships with other characters. And, like, that's exhausting. Why would I ever want to watch?
And, you know, when writers make those characters that have those kind of features, like, the author's just endorsing that kind of behavior. They really should stop writing those kinds of characters. They should just be perfect from the get-go.
And what really stinks is when you have, like, a combination of those things. Like, sometimes there would be shows that would make an episode entirely focused on the villain, the bad guy who we are supposed to root for in that moment, and see him do something that is completely unrelated to the main plot and just be like in their psyche, or like exploring their relationships with other characters. Like, who wants to watch that? Like, what kind of terrible writing is that? Like, that's no one's favorite episode of any kind of series.
No one ever wants to root for the villain. Villains are villains for a reason.
Exactly, exactly. Which is why I think this show does a really good job of showing us some villains who you just completely hate in all ways, and you don't really have to have a lot of complicated emotion regarding them, which is great. I love that.
Do you want to do a little synopsis?
Oh yeah, I'd love to. This series, Avatar: The Last Airbender, focuses on a world in which all the different people are able to do something called bending, which is sort of described as mastering the four elements of air, water, earth, and fire. And at the very beginning of the series, we start off where the fire people are trying to take over the world because they're evil. And they're going to do that by killing all of the air people. But one of the air people is this little boy named Aang, who we discover is something called an avatar, which is like it's kind of like the Slayer in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's just like this one person born in each generation who has the ability to control all the elements. So that's this kid, but he is just like a goofy kid. He's so goofy that we never see him being goofy. He just tells us, which is great, because like that saves us a lot of time of like seeing him like mess around and be a kid. If he just tells the audience, like, that's just efficient writing. Like, if he just tells us,
tell, don't show.
Exactly. It's the oldest screenwriting rule in the book: tell, don't show. And the show does a great job at that. Just throughout. So Aang runs away, and he ends up becoming trapped in ice for 100 years, at which point he's awoken by two water kids, Sokka and Katara, who let him know that it's been 100 years of war of the Fire Nation taking over the whole world. And so he joins up with Katara and Sokka to kind of slowly have him learn the different elements, and they're just kind of along for the ride. Like, you sort of get the sense that they just like hate their home and want to like go off and travel, which is relatable because their home seems boring. They like live in the snow or whatever. And amidst all of this, you've got Zuko, who is the exiled prince of the Fire Nation, and his goofy uncle. They're kind of like the low points of this series, I'd say. Like, they're kind of boring. I don't know. Again, it's to your point. Like, they're bad guys. Like, they've like, you know, murdered a whole bunch of people. So it's like kind of weird when they like try to make us like feel something for them. Like, I don't really like that. It's uncomfy. I don't like when I have to sympathize with bad people. It makes me feel icky. But in any case, they're chasing after Aang and Katara and Sokka. The series kind of just follows their adventures as they go from place to place. And some of the episodes are it's a pretty serialized show. Most episodes kind of like lead directly into the other. There's like sort of like an internal story to each of them. Sometimes it feels like there's like three or four internal stories that like still kind of try to be serialized into the next one. Which again, I think just speaks to the great pacing that this show has and the potential of an hour. Cause if you didn't have the full hour, you'd have to like break it up into smaller chunks, and you know, they would probably be wasting a lot more time with these individual stories. But when you smash them all together, you can just kind of speed through the most important plot elements. And then you don't have to worry about all those other little filler details like characters and relationships and feelings.
That's not what we're here for. We're here for action. No relationships, only fighting.
Exactly.
It's a war series.
It's a war series. We see so many people getting burned alive in this thing. And I think that's great because I'm an adult, and by being an adult means that I really relate to when I see graphic violence on screen. And
you really get that in the first 20 minutes, you know, just opening with outright genocide. Like, that's a perfect way to hook new watchers.
Exactly. If I see people dying, I can understand that the show is mature and grown up and definitely not made for kids, which, you know, of course, is the worst thing a show can be, is appealing to children, right? I mean, can you imagine how terrible this would be if it was meant to make children happy? I know.
No adult likes to watch shows that are here to make children happy. We're here for the things that make us think about the corruption of society and American morals.
Exactly. And I think in this case, you know, showing all of the airbenders getting murdered by the fire people, that's good, because otherwise we wouldn't know why genocide is bad if we didn't have to, like, watch all these people we don't know die. And then we don't have to, like, really, like, live in the sad moment when Aang discovers it years later, because we've already seen it happen. So the audience is already, like, emotionally prepped for that. Which is good, because you don't want to, like, surprise people with anything or put them in a character's shoes necessarily. That's you know, again, screenwriting.
No, the best way to build tension is to have the audience always know what's coming.
Yes. I think it's called non-dramatic irony. I think Shakespeare used it a lot.
I never got around to reading Shakespeare. So it felt not worth it.
I mean, you're right. It's
stick with the American classics.
Exactly. No,
Great
no
Gatsby. Catcher in the Rye. Dune.
Yeah.
That's a white savior narrative. That's a classic American story.
Exactly. Yeah, I think one thing that is probably not great about this is that I really was kind of hankering for a white savior. As a white person, I find it really hard to relate to non-white people. So yeah, Katie. Yeah, What did you think overall about this series?
You know, I think, you know, as we said, they're building on some good, like, some good foundation. We're now building, like, the next layer. We're building on top of some good foundation. And I think that, you know, they made some good artistic decisions, as we talked about the casting. You know, they did go an interesting direction, but I think they're all pretty good actors. They're all very dynamic. They deliver their lines really solidly. You can tell, like, they're putting their all into it.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, child actors are always flawless, and, you know, I think it's good that we work them to the same quality as adults and expect them to be, you know, the same level of proficiency as their adult counterparts. I think that's, you know, that builds character. It's like they're, you know, pulling themselves up from their bootstraps, really. But yeah, I think all of them definitely lived up to that. I think Aang and Katara in particular, as main characters, I think they really, really sold their portrayals. I was really impressed by how much exposition they could just get out just by talking. Like I said, again, really great examples of tell, don't show. Like, for example, we know that Katara really wants to be a warrior and doesn't want to do, like, lame girly things like heal. Which I think is really cool, because I think, you know, we're all in agreement that, like, you know, people who heal and are doctors and nurses and such are kind of useless to society. So, you know, at that, I think it's good that, you know, someone's just coming out and saying it.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like we have to throw also some props. We're giving it to the actors, to the costume team and the hair and makeup team.
So clean,
so perfect. You know, they really nailed everything.
Everyone looks so red carpet ready. I love that.
So realistic, you know, natural makeup looks, out of bed hair, not a plastic looking wig in sight. No Barbie dolls here.
Exactly. Everyone looks great. And I think also, like, you know, we talked a little about the CGI. But also, like, kudos to the use of real modern technology. I saw quite a bit of use of the volume, which is the LED green screen, essentially, that's been used on a lot of Star Wars shows. And I think it was really effectively used here. You know, sometimes you see a set and, like, you're really aware that it's a set. Like, you, like, see people, like, interacting with it. Like, you see, like, the depth of the lighting and the shadows. And ultimately, it's just all that level of detail, just, like, it's kind of just distracting. Here, it's like you can just tell they're all just in front of just a flat monitor. So you just really get to focus on the characters and the performances. So you don't have to, you know, worry about, like, thinking that they're integrated into a world. You can just watch them as if you're watching, like, a school play, which is great.
And, you know, speaking of technology, one of my favorite films is The Matrix, specifically because of all the action scenes and all that awesome slow motion they use in The Matrix. And sometimes you watch a movie and you just go, man, I wish we used as much and or more slow motion than The Matrix scenes.
Yes,
I want more dodging bullets. And, you know, these action sequences, you know, well choreographed, and they really drew them out and the dynamicism out by just using all this beautiful slow motion to really highlight all that great CGI work, especially also.
For sure. Yeah, I think each of the four elements, I think it's fair to say, looked equally good in CG. I can't really pinpoint any one that looked worse than the other. I think they all looked fantastic. Really, I mean, kudos on how they're visualizing Air. You know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, live action, you know, Air looks like nothing. So I think they did a really good job of, you know, finding ways to make that look not terrible. I mean, it's yeah, there's really no other way they could have possibly done it. There's no way to visualize a story like this in an effective way. So, you know, I think they did their best, and I think they did a pretty good job of it.
What else is there to talk about? I mean, the story's not that important. We're really hitting the big things here.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think that, you know, the story is, you know, pretty silly, all things considered. You know,
it's pretty typical, one of those, whatchamacallem, hero's journey. Is that what they call them nowadays?
I think I have heard this newfangled term. Yeah, the hero's journey, I think, is what we're going for. What's really nice is that just it moves at such a fast clip. Again, 8 episodes. You know, we really don't have to spend a lot of time with any of these characters, like, actually, like, learning or updating their skills. Like, I think it's really great that, like, it's pretty much instantly Katara is a really good waterbender. Like, she, like, can't really do much in the first episode. And then by the end of the first episode, she can just fully destroy a Fire Nation ship, pretty much. And then by the end of it, she is the best in the whole world, which I think
and
is
I love,
great.
You know, that it's a quest for this Avatar Aang to learn how to control more of his powers and figure stuff out. And, you know, he kind of does that with one, but, you know, he really focuses in on one thing. You know, you got to become an expert. There's no, you know, you don't want to be a jack of all trades. You really want to, jack of all trades, master of none, that thing. You really got to focus in on one.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they have, like, some nebulous idea that he's, like, going on this journey to, like, learn the elements. But, like, honestly, he doesn't really spend much time learning, which is cool because by the end, I guess, mild spoilers here, he's able to commune with the ocean spirit and just waterbend, like, an entire ocean. So he clearly didn't really need to learn that much. Like, can you imagine if they spent, like, multiple episodes just showing him and Katara learning waterbending? Like, he doesn't need to learn
so
at all.
boring.
And she's just automatically good, which, as we all know, especially when you're writing female characters, like, you never want to show them being, like, not as good as another character or learning anything. Like, it's better that they're just naturally good at what they do.
But, you know, you still gotta show that, like, there are, like, for female characters, you want to still have, like, they gotta live up to something. So I think that episode in the Northern Water Tribe was good. You know, she's still not quite there, you know. Do you feel the same way about that episode?
About Katara in the Northern Water Tribe?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, no, I think, like, again, I like how easily she is able to just be the waterbending master. I think that's cool. Oh, I was gonna say something else, but now I forget. What was I gonna say? Oh, I really like how easily she was swayed by that one boy, who, like, you know, like, the lost boy kind of things, who, like, lived in the middle of the woods, and were terrorists. I really liked that it showed that, you know, she was, even though, you know, she's, like, a really powerful warrior, which, you know, that's how we know she's strong, we still know she's a woman because she's really easily duped by a handsome man. And I think that's important to show the multifaceted nature of a woman, that you can still be, you know, traditionally masculine and strong and a warrior type, but also you still have that frail femininity of being really naive and easily fooled by handsome people. So we call a well-rounded female character.
Yeah, I mean, some of the best female characters were just the ones that you just look at and you go, yeah, I'd like to keep looking at you.
Exactly. It's what makes good female writing. And yeah, I mean, I think just overall, like, my thoughts on the series is, you know, this really feels like, you know, the best possible version of what it could be. Like, yeah, there were some flaws along the way. It's not perfect, but like, no, of course it's not a Tarantino film. I mean, that's just the most perfect. But you know, it's still I can't imagine anyone doing it any better. You know, I think, you know, live action, obviously. 8 episodes, 1 hour each. Like, that's the best version of this. That's how you can best tell a story like this. I'm looking forward. They've got 2 more seasons. I can't wait to see where they're gonna go with this.
Oh, that's a lot of seasons.
I know, 3 seasons.
Got a whole lot of time.
I know, that's like 16 more episodes. That's crazy.
Yeah, 16 more hours. Wow, that's so much.
I know, it's a ton. Which means we get a chance for 16 more stories involving these characters, and seeing where they go next. I mean, I guess
I hope there are some like really like episodes in really dark places, you know, that have very minimal lighting sources. Those are my favorite kinds of television.
Yeah, definitely. I like that. I think that it's better when I can't see what's happening on screen, because then my imagination fills in the gaps.
Then they have to tell me, not show me. And we've established
exactly.
Tell,
Again,
don't show.
Tell, don't show. That's the best.
If anyone takes anything away from this, that the key tenet of writing anything is tell, don't show.
Of course. Obviously. I mean, again, screenwriting 101. Like, have they even been paying attention up to this point?
No, we paid money to get real degrees. Trust us.
Yeah, I do hope that in the upcoming seasons that they don't add any new characters, because I feel like we have like a really great balance here with our main three. I think the absolute worst thing a show like this could do is add a fourth main character to that group. I think it would really
be too many characters.
Too many characters, couldn't possibly add anything. And then like you would like look back at the first season and be like, oh, like, man, like those were the good old days when they didn't have that extra fourth character. Yeah, unfortunately, I feel like, you know, with shows like this, the first season is usually the best, and it just kind of tapers off from there. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think, yeah, overall, I think this was a really good adaptation of the 2010 film. And I'm looking forward to seeing what else they can do now. They've kind of finished with where the 2010 film left off, so they're kind of in uncharted territory now. They can kind of just write whatever story they want to now. They're no longer based off of anything. So I'm really curious. Now I'm going in completely blind. I don't know where the story goes, where it ends. I assume Aang has to murder the Fire Lord by the end, which I really want to see in a really graphic style, because again, as we've established, like, the more violence and death I see on screen, the more grown up I feel.
And you know, we just gotta get rid of the villain somehow. Like, the only way to get rid of a villain is by killing them. There's no redemption.
No, I mean, especially like with this guy who, like, you know, the actor is just kind of okay. Like, I feel like he just seems like so flat, pure evil this whole time that, like, yeah, I really have no reservations about him just dying brutally on screen in front of me. But basically all the Fire Nation characters, I sort of feel that way about. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing that. And, you know, so far they haven't really established that that's bad in this world. So I feel good about that. I feel that that's definitely where the story is going.
Yeah, I think you put it well.
Do you have any final thoughts, Katie? Any hopes for the future seasons? Any last thoughts about this the season we do have?
I mean, I think we developed the characters well in this one. I hope they really just kind of work on, you know, progressing the story, as you were saying. Like, we got to take care of these Fire Nation people in the most brutal way possible. So,
yeah.
Hope to see more of that, less character development.
Yeah.
Don't need any more of that. That's a waste of time.
Definitely not. And luckily, I think, you know, given that they're only doing 8 episodes per season, I feel like we don't have to worry so much about them dwelling on any individual character for too long. Mm-hmm.
You're not adding another character. That's just jumping the shark there.
So jumping. Thank you, Katie. So obviously jumping the shark. But yeah, no, I really appreciate the creativity and ingenuity. There were all sorts of things in the season that really were not at all present in the Shyamalan movie. So looking forward to seeing where they go from there. It's a really interesting concept. I think, again, as I said before, this is definitely the best medium with which to tell this story. And I think they utilized it to the best of their abilities. I think, you know, again, we always talk here about how, you know, live action is a medium, not a genre, and that there's, you know, so much potential with live action that you really can't get in any other forms of storytelling. And I think this is a really great example of a story that could just only be told in live action, and use that to the best of its abilities. I mean, can you imagine anything else being used to tell this story? It would be
no,
so
not at all.
You wouldn't get nearly the same benefits as you have with this band. So
I
yeah,
I think that's the best technology.
Obviously. And again, it makes me feel like a grown up, which is the most important thing in any piece of media, is that I always feel like I'm better than children, which is really just my everyday state of being as an adult, is just feeling the need to reaffirm to myself that I'm better than a child.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, I guess if there's nothing else to say, we will pop back into our live action time machine and go watch some more classic live action movies and TV shows, as we always do.
Let's watch 2019 Lion King now.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I don't even know why you bother calling it 2019 Lion King, though. It's the only Lion King.
Sometimes I just refer to movies by the year they came out, no matter
oh,
what.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. I
make
like
sure,
that.
Like, you know, those non-film people really, really get what I'm talking about.
For sure. Yeah. No, it's a good way to do things. Well, I'm Scarlett.
I'm Katie.
We're your live action mates and April Fools!
I never want to do that again.
Oh, it feels so wrong. I feel so dirty.
I'm gonna go take a bath. I gotta wash it off.